you know, you want your best player to be here. And there is some time, but, you know, it is a setback. I take it basically at face value that he's not here. And he has a reason, but that's on him to tell whoever what his reason is.
That was the new head coach of the Houston Rockets, Steven Silas, trying to answer the biggest question in the new NBA season so far. Where in the world is James Harden? Today, Tim McMahon joins us to tell us what the Rockets superstar has been up to, how big a problem this all is for Houston, and where the story may be headed next. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, December 8th. This is ESPN Daily. Tim McMahon, I have been so excited to talk to you about what it's like to be on the Rockets beat right now, because covering this team has never been boring, really. But how would you describe what it's like at this moment? What's the mood around all of this?
Look, the Rockets tends to be a lot of turbulence, I think, to put it politely.
Tim McMahon covers the NBA for ESPN from Texas, where he's been documenting the chaos in Houston all offseason.
Typically, that turbulence, at least over the last 8 years, has been about trying to find a co-star for James Harden. James Harden say, no, I'm tired of this guy. Get this one, or that, you know, whatever the case may be. Now the turbulence is them desperately clinging to the hope that they can convince this guy who is touring the country with a rapper right now, partying maskless during a pandemic while they're beginning training camp. Come on, we can still win. You know, get back on board. And that's a heck of a challenge, to put it lightly.
So I want to reset for the listener here, Tim, because a year ago, the Rockets were in a very different place. They were embarking on a grand experiment. Their GM was Daryl Morey. They had two former MVPs, two former teammates with the Thunder in James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And just 1 year later, Daryl Morey is gone, Russell Westbrook is gone, and despite the rest of the team reporting for training camp on December 1st, James Harden is still MIA. So what do we know about where he is right now?
So we are recording on Monday morning, and his last known location to me is Las Vegas.
By the way, just an amazing sentence before whatever the next sentence is going to be.
Yes, my understanding is it's gone from Atlanta to Las Vegas. The Rockets, as you may be aware, are based in Houston. Mm. Not a short walk, but for a guy who can afford to, say, throw $100,000 cash in a Prada bag along with a $200,000 watch to give his friend a birthday present, it's not difficult to charter a private jet and get back to Houston if you are so determined.
I want to explain for those who are uninitiated, Tim, what exactly we saw James Harden doing in Las Vegas. What was Lil Baby, the rapper, doing? Why was there a Prada bag full of literal and metaphorical honey buns? Like, what was happening there?
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, the whole honey bun metaphor, that was new to me. I don't have any friends that throw $100,000 bricks of cash at me for my birthday. Wouldn't mind having those types.
Same.
But yeah, so Atlanta, this is Thursday when NBA players are doing individual workouts. They're supposed to be quarantining aside from working out, testing at the team facility, and essential activities. Well, Harden hops over to Atlanta and attends Lil Baby's birthday party, gives him the Prada bag stuffed with, like you said, the literal honey buns and then the metaphorical honey bun. I don't even know how to pronounce the name of the watch, but it's a, you know, $200,000 watch and a Prada bag, because you see Harden is proud of him.
Mm.
So that was, you know, it was very, very thoughtful, I thought, to Lil Baby, not so much to the Houston Rockets. And Harden was also apparently very proud to be attending this party maskless, because he posted several pictures on his Instagram account, which, you know, Harden's not a big IG guy in terms of activity. So
no,
he definitely wanted it to be known that here he is at Lil Baby's birthday party. And then as the Rockets are going through their first practices, when I first saw these other videos surface, and again, forgive me, I'm not quite sure what said underscore one M's.
there's just so many underscores. I'm with you, man. It's really hard to keep track of these usernames.
Well, I mean, I'm a 44-year-old old fart, so I don't know exactly who he is, but apparently he's, you know, pretty important dude in little baby circle. Anyways, so he's got pictures of them continuing the party in Vegas, and you know, there's a jam-packed tour bus. There's a lot of people at a dinner. There's making it rain at the club, all that kind of stuff. I think I saw a mask or two in one of those videos, maybe a club employee. I certainly didn't see one on James Harden. Reached out to the league office and just kind of got the equivalent of a shrug emoji back as a response. Not a literal one, but that was my rough translation of it. And so, you know, again, the Rockets are opening up camp. John Wall, who was obviously just traded to the Rockets from Washington for Russell Westbrook, you know, he says, hey, I'm for sure that James wants to be here. And, you know, we talked before the trade, you know, we want to play with each other. You know, we talked about that.
That was the main reason why, you know, I mean, talking through the whole process of what was going to happen with this trade, if it happened or did not happen, is one of the reasons that we wanted to play together. So I have high ability and 100% effort that he wants to be and be a part of his organization.
And, you know, the way he put it is, you know, they're just trying to decide when it's best for James to show up. Well, I mean, I think if you'd have maybe asked any, you know, Steven Silas, as he's going through his first camp as a head coach, and it's an abbreviated camp on a team that's made a lot of changes, I think he probably would have voted for the beginning of training camp as when was best.
Yeah. So what have we heard from the Rockets' new head coach about all of this?
So Steven Silas, the first-year Rockets coach who worked his entire life for this opportunity and now gets to deal with this, he says Sunday night, look, he hadn't talked to Harden in a while, but his understanding through the pipeline was that Harden was going to be in for an individual workout Sunday evening, which that's all Harden can do right now because obviously he's not exactly followed the COVID-19 protocols the league has set out, you know, to the letter of the law. But Harden did not make it back to Houston for the individual workout on Sunday, from what a source told me. Told Rockets management that he will be back soon. Soon might be doing a lot of work there. And, it's honestly a situation now where the Rockets, you know, based on what they're being told, well, he says he's coming. He says he's coming. He says he's coming. And it's really kind of a day-to-day thing on whether the face of the franchise is actually going to show up while the rest of the team's going through training camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim, all of this brings to mind a particularly dysfunctional relationship that also has what seems to be a severe power imbalance. Mm-hmm. And last week, that new head coach, Steven Silas, he got asked, how is he dealing with all of this? How is he dealing with a disgruntled, globetrotting James Harden?
From my perspective, my communication has been, I'm giving you space. And that's kind of where it's been as far as my communication with him. You know, guys like that need that. They need to figure it out, and they need to, they don't need someone banging on them all the time to kind of figure out where they're at and whatnot. So
what does that approach sound like to you?
You know, it sounds like to me a head coach who understands that he has no choice but to bend over backwards and try to make this work, no matter how much of a mess his superstar is trying to make of the situation. Because the Rockets' plan at this point, and these things are obviously always fluid, but their plan at this point is to go into the season with James Harden on the roster. They absolutely refuse to be rushed into trading a perennial MVP candidate for 60 or 70 cents on the dollar. They think, look, we can be competitive with this roster. If we're winning, James would calm down. And, you know, maybe that's ridiculously optimistic, but I'm just telling you what they're thinking. Mm. So what's Steven Silas going to say? He better get his bleepity bleep in here. How, you know, do you think that's going to do anything to improve the situation? So, I mean, again, you've got a guy who has 22 years of experience as an NBA assistant coach, has worked his entire life for this opportunity, and is being blatantly disrespected to the point where the guy's not even giving him the courtesy of any kind of communication at this point. And he has to sit there and answer questions. It's not exactly an enviable situation that Steven Silas finds himself in right now.
So I want to be clear about this too, Tim. Why does James Harden want out? Where does he want to go? What do we know about what he is demanding?
Just to be blatantly honest, I wish I could give you something that is either from the horse's mouth or at least from, you know, the man next to the horse. But I've not talked to anybody that is either, you know, I haven't talked to James Harden, and I haven't talked to anybody in his very tight inner circle, despite obviously my attempts. So, you know, again, this is my interpretation based on the information that I have, which isn't directly from James Harden, but it's clear that he feels like the Rockets' window of being a legitimate championship contender has closed. And really, it comes down to this. James Harden has been heavily involved and very influential on all the moves the Rockets have made to get Dwight Howard and to boot Dwight Howard, to get Chris Paul and to boot Chris Paul, to get Russell Westbrook. And then that thing flamed out. And so the next time James Harden is going to be paired with a bona fide superstar, no disrespect to John Wall coming off a 2-year serious injury absence, it's very clear that James Harden would have to be the ones to pack his bags. And so, you know, well, he's got his bags packed. He just hadn't landed with another NBA team yet. He's, you know, touring with Lil Baby.
So the Nets are the team that we all hear about.
Yes.
When it comes to where Harden wants to go, but are there other teams, Tim, that are conceivably substitutes for what Brooklyn is offering him?
Well, and straight up, if the Rockets trade James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets, they are settling for 60 or 70 cents on the dollar. They are making a deal that they would have to pinch their nose to make. Mm. That's just the way it is. They want a legitimate young franchise cornerstone and a massive package of picks. And while the Nets have a lot of, or several good, very good players they can put in a deal, you know, there's not a young franchise cornerstone on that roster. Caris LeVert is not a perennial all-star type of talent. And so, obviously, the team that you're going to hear the most about, the team that makes the most sense, is the team, you know, where Daryl Morey is, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. A Ben Simmons plus a big package of picks, that is a hypothetical deal that certainly makes a lot of sense. And if you're, you know, if you're asking me to make a wild guess of the way this thing eventually ends up, that would be my guess.
All right, Tim, coming up, I want to look at some of the reasons why a Sixers trade may not happen. I want to look at what the hell else is happening in Houston with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. And I want to see what this year might look like for Rockets fans.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Tim, I feel obligated at this point to introduce The other enormous character here, the owner of the Houston Rockets, Tillman Fertitta, who bought the team in 2017. So for those who are unfamiliar, how would you begin to describe who Tillman is and what this character is like?
Character is definitely the word. Look, Tillman is a Gulf Coast, Texas, wild type of character who he has made his billions in the restaurant and casino industry. He is a guy who is a very proud man. He is certainly used to getting his way. You know, he's a dude who paid a record $2.2 billion for the Houston Rockets and made sure that everybody knew that it was all him and he did not have one single partner because he's the guy who's got all the say. He's the boss. He is El Jefe. It's been a wild ride for him. You know, he buys the Rockets just before the first season of Chris Paul. They win 67 games. You know, they go on that run to the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, there's been a lot that's happened since then. And you know, it seems to be getting progressively rockier.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be the NBA owner who might be most negatively impacted by the pandemic, economically speaking, because he is the sole owner of Landry's, the restaurant empire you mentioned, as well as casinos like the Golden Nugget and these various hotels. Where does all of that stand, and how does that inform, Tim, the backdrop of this incredibly chaotic situation with his NBA team?
Right, and look, let's just be straight up. When you talk about Tillman Fertitta in NBA circles, one thing you're going to hear is, does this guy really have the bankroll? Is he rich enough and committed enough to really fund a legitimate contender? I will tell you that Tillman Fertitta is very sensitive to that speculation and that criticism. As far as, you know, how that plays in all this, I mean, you know, we can argue about would things have been different if they'd have spent the full mid-level, this, that, or the other. But I think that it'd be a little out of place right now, considering that, you know, before the Russ trade, the major move that they made to set up free agency was creating the opportunity where they could go spend $41 million to pay Christian Wood and to get him out of Detroit. This offseason has not been about Tillman Fertitta pinching pennies in any way, shape, or form. He's actually done the exact opposite and aggressively spent to try to upgrade the roster, really in an attempt to try to convince Harden that they can still be a contender.
On that note, what do you expect to see out of John Wall? Because I truly have no idea, Tim. He has missed two full seasons due to Achilles and heel injuries. Before then, of course, he was known as one of the fastest guards we've ever seen, maybe. What do the Rockets think, also, from what John Wall is offering them?
Look, they traded for John Wall sight unseen, right? This wasn't a situation where they were able to get their medical staff and all those kind of things. You know, the reports coming out of his workouts and the pickup games in Miami, oh, John Wall looks great. You know, you see the videos of him throwing down ridiculous dunks, all those kind of things. But this is a dude who hadn't played NBA basketball in almost 2 years. It is, as you said, a guy whose game is based in large part on elite speed and athleticism coming off of a ruptured Achilles tendon. I mean, there is just immense risk here, given that this guy's got 3 years remaining on a max contract.
And so that pairing with James Harden is going to be their attempt to satiate him. But you also mentioned another name that's super interesting in Christian Wood, because it's Christian Wood, it's DeMarcus Cousins, the other big man they added. Tell me what that says about that small ball era that we just saw last season in Houston.
Yeah, with the exit of Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey came the exit of small ball. You know, they've pivoted off that. So they went out and they got two centers who, you know, are kind of multi-skilled type of guys. And look, DeMarcus Cousins is a flyer, right? He obviously is the bigger name and has the much more impressive resume, but he's also there on a non-guaranteed minimum deal. You know, the big investment was Christian Wood, 3 years, $41 million. This is a guy who essentially had a dozen game sample size as a starter in Detroit after they traded Andre Drummond, put up big numbers, very efficient numbers during that stretch, but it was also for a Pistons team that lost 11 of the 12 games. But 25 years old, great finisher, very athletic, can definitely be a role man. Also, you know, is the rare big man who can either pop or roll, be effective doing both. And Steven Silas, who's been the offensive coordinator for the Dallas Mavericks the last few years, pointed to Kristaps Porzingis and said, that's what I envision in terms of how they would use Christian Wood. And, you know, they envision Christian Wood being a featured guy in Houston. And, you know, even before the Russ trade, Wood said he thought he could be a really solid second option with James Harden. And he's going to get that opportunity. I believe he still gets the opportunity to play with James Harden.
So how does the non-small ball approach, how does the Steven Silas offense, as Silas envisions it, and you've covered Silas for years now because he was in Dallas with the Mavericks, how do you see this offense fitting around James?
Well, look, it won't be as historically reliant on ISOs, but if you have James Harden, there's going to be a whole lot of ISO basketball. He's the best one-on-one player, certainly in the world right now, and arguably in the history of the game.
Sure.
But Silas wants to see a lot more movement off the ball. He wants to make it more difficult for teams just to load up on James Harden. You know, I think if you look at a lot of the ways the Mavericks use Luka Doncic, those are the things that he has in mind for James Harden. Now, would Harden buy in? I don't know. I mean, I would say I can try to get out to Vegas into the club, but I'm not, you know, I'm all about social distancing right now. So that's not an assignment I'm asking for.
Tim, I want to ask you about that trade you mentioned before, the hypothetical trade with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Right.
Because it is...
Repeat, hypothetical, please.
Very hypothetical. But let's have fun with the hypothetical, because This is the love quadrangle, is it? Like Daryl Morey, Tillman Fertitta, James Harden, and then those guys in Philly with Ben Simmons, specifically as the centerpiece of that deal. Is this even a thing that Tillman Fertitta would want to do, given that Daryl Morey was the guy who just left his franchise under the guise of taking a break, only to reemerge running the Philadelphia 76ers?
Yeah, Daryl and his gap week. Is it something Tillman Fertitta wants to do? Hell no. Hell no. Number one, he doesn't want to trade James Harden. Number two, you know, I don't know that Daryl's getting a Fertitta Christmas card. but look, would he rather trade James Harden to Philadelphia and deliver him to Daryl Morey for a deal that is good value? Or would he rather, you know, let Harden bully him and handpick his destination and take back 60 or 70 cents on the dollar? If they trade James Harden, if they make a deal that they don't want to make, there has to be a young franchise cornerstone in the deal. I mean, it ain't like there's just a ton of those type of dudes around the league. And typically, teams want to hold on to those dudes as long as possible.
I have to imagine that the Rockets, like, they're not naive. They're not stupid. I think they know the sober reality of this. So what do they want from James Harden, Tim? Because obviously they want him to show up, but presumably they know that they're going to have to deal him.
Listen, you and I can sit here and say that. The people I've talked to in Houston are not to that full kind of admission yet. I mean, what do they want from James Harden? To show up, to hoop, to compete, and to give Steven Silas and this remodeled roster a chance. That's what they want. They want to see if this group of guys can be somebody you have to take seriously in the Western Conference.
So, Tim, let's bring it full circle here. What do you think covering this team, this soap opera, given these conflicting incentives and agendas, is going to be like for the rest of the season?
I would say that Harden is not exactly the warmest and fuzziest guy with the media on a regular basis. I don't think that his Zoom media sessions, when and if we ever get one or a few of those aren't going to be, sitting around the campfire, kumbaya type of experiences. The culture in Houston for years has revolved around James Harden, and it's hard to envision this being a productive culture when it seems like he's determined not just to get out of town, but to make things as messy as possible. You know, when a Rocket source told me several weeks ago that they were, quote, willing to get uncomfortable, meaning they didn't mind going into camp and maybe even the season with Westbrook and Harden on the roster. Obviously, it didn't happen with Westbrook. We'll see about Harden. It seems like willing to get uncomfortable is something that, James Harden took as a challenge.
Tim McMahon, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Appreciate you having me.
Okay, up next, a moment when sports and history collided 40 years ago today.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. 40 years ago today, on December 8th, 1980, the Patriots and Dolphins kicked off at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday Night Football.
Hello again, everyone, and we're excited about tonight because the Patriots have not been able to beat Shula and Miami here at the Orange Bowl since 1966.
It was a division rivalry game. Playoff implications were on the line. But what happened on the field by any measure is just a footnote in history. What made that game and that night a matter of history is what happened shortly before 11 p.m. on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, where John Lennon, coming home from the recording studio, was gunned down by an obsessed fan named Mark David Chapman. Lennon was rushed to the hospital, where doctors would attempt to resuscitate him. But by 11:15 p.m., the founding member of the Beatles, one of the most influential musicians of the 20th century, was declared dead at age 40. This, of course, happened decades before cell phones and push notifications and Twitter kept us permanently plugged in to the news matrix. This was long before 24/7 cable networks even. So when reporters and executives at ABC became the first to catch wind of Lennon's murder, the news made its way to the one place that was broadcasting live at the time. Monday Night Football.
Frank, you just can't come into a game the way New England has come into this. Fighting for a playoff berth, you've got to go all out.
Where, with 40 seconds left in overtime in the game and commercials, announcer Howard Cosell consulted Frank Gifford in the booth with literal moments to decide what to do.
Shot outside his apartment, the Dakota apartment. Fellas, I just don't know. I'd like your opinion. I can't see this game situation for that news flash. Can you?
Absolutely, I can see it.
You can?
You betcha. We've got to. If we know it, we've got to do it.
All right.
I don't hang on. It's a tragic moment. And
all right.
This is going to shake up the whole world.
All right. I will get it in. Let Gift call this play, and then I'll get it in.
So as New England's kicker, John Smith, lined up for a last-second field goal, Gifford returned from commercial.
Timeout was called. 3 seconds remaining. John Smith is on the line. And I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game. No matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Smith's kick would get blocked and the Dolphins would win. And a week of worldwide mourning followed. At one point, in fact, more than 100,000 gathered in Central Park for a moment of silence. They were honoring a loss that millions of people found out by watching a football game. A loss that, 40 years later, is still difficult to imagine. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.